This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Hey guys, before we start, a quick shout out to Alpha Dog Nutrition for sponsoring this podcast. Alpha Dog products are now available at dusupply.com, and you can use code ALPHADOG15 at checkout for 15% off and a credit for free shipping to try it yourself. Now let's get you to your podcast.
Welcome to my podcast, where we are going to talk about a lifestyle with dogs and throw in a few life lessons along the way. Whether you're a hound hunter, bird dog enthusiast, running setters, pointers, retrievers, or a flat-out running dog junkie, this podcast is for you. I am your host, Heath Hyatt, a certified law enforcement canine trainer with over 3 decades of personal and professional training and handling experience. It's time for me to pay it forward. So grab your leads, lace up those boots, and come and join me on this lifelong process of teaching, training, and learning. Are you looking to unlock your dog's full potential and give them the best nutrition possible for peak performance? Then look no further. Anookshuk has what you're looking for. Anookshuk's nutrient-dense formulas are crafted to keep your dog's energy high and performance top-notch. Packed with premium proteins and essential fats, Anookshuk delivers the balanced nutrition your dog needs to thrive. From hunting dogs to police canines, Anookshuk is trusted by professionals. Give your dog the power of peak performance with Anookshuk Professional Dog Food. Here we are on another episode of What's Up Wednesday. Welcome back, friends. Thank you for joining in. And today's episode is important to me. And a lot of you guys may not even know about this, and some of you guys may not remember this, and maybe it'll refresh your memory. But this episode is dropping on April 16th, and I'm actually recording it on April the 12th, first day of turkey season here in Virginia. And I have opted out because the last couple of days I've been listening, I've been doing a little scouting, and Thursday evening it started raining. It rained off and on. The temperature started dropping. We were up in the 70s, and every morning when I get up, it's in the low 40s or high 30s to low 40s. And this morning when I got up, it was misting rain, which is not a huge deterrent, but the wind. The wind, I'm looking out the door right now, and the wind is still rocking. It's swaying the trees. Not rocking, but it's swaying the trees. So I've opted out today. Tomorrow evening, I'm headed up to Kentucky. I'm going to hunt with my good friend, Jerry Barker. We're going to have a good couple of days, and I hope we get to do a lot of hunting and fishing. That's the goal. I've taken off this week, and that's all I'm going to do this week is hunt and fish. So next week's episode, we'll bring you some of that, back. But let's get back into April 16th. What is it? 18 years ago, April 16th, 2007. It was a Monday morning, and I was working for a different agency. I was working in Withville, Virginia, which if any of you guys travel through Virginia on 77 or 81, that's kind of the crossing section. So 81 and 77 run together there. 77 runs out of West Virginia or north out of North Carolina into the southwestern part of the state. Of course, 81 pretty much runs from the Tennessee line up into back into West Virginia on the top side, short trip through West Virginia into Maryland, and so on and so forth, Pennsylvania. So Withville sits right in that intersection of 77 and 81. So it was a Monday morning, and I was in circuit court for grand jury. And grand jury is when you've taken cases out of the general district court, and they certified them up, felonies, of course, and you have to go before a grand jury and testify. And this is one of the things that Virginia does. Some states does not do it, but you got to testify your probable cause in front of a grand jury, which is a panel of 8 to 10 to 12 people. And they decide if there's enough evidence to go ahead and have a trial on it. So all the agencies from the area come into the circuit court, and they put all the officers in the officer room. That's what we call it, the officer room. And you sit in this room, and you're whatever time you're on the docket, you know, they may have 4 or 5 people on the docket at 9 o'clock and 2 or 3 at 9:30 and then another couple at 10, so on and so forth. Just kind of give you how that works. So we're sitting in the officer room with my agency, with county, state police. I can't remember if there's a couple game wardens in there or not, and the Commonwealth attorney. And we're all just, you know, kind of sitting in there talking, you know, cutting up, carrying on, just having conversation like we always do. And I won't give his name out, but one of the state police guys, state police officers, his phone kept ringing. Now, we turn our phones on silent, but it kept going off. So he picks it up and he looks up and he tells the Commonwealth attorney, he said, we have to go. So there was 2 other troopers in there, and they literally left out of there immediately, like gone. They were gone. So we're all kind of like, what in the world's going on? You know, they're the state police. They're covered throughout the state. Well, within 30 minutes, and I can't remember if I had went in and testified in front of the grand jury or not, or I was still waiting. I don't remember that detail. Like I said, it's been 18 years ago. But I remember within a 30-minute time period, we got information that there was a shooting at Virginia Tech. So they had pretty much put out a page to Southwest. Division 4 is our state police, and then Division 6 is right beside us, which is Montgomery and Roanoke County, where I work now. So they had put out a page, and those guys, they left. And as the day went on, we were getting information. Now, guys, I have a lot of friends that work at Virginia Tech. I had a few friends at the time that worked at Blacksburg and Montgomery County. I went to the academy with a bunch of guys at Montgomery County. So we're getting this information throughout the morning that there had been a shooting, and, you know, everybody at my, or several guys at my agency were like, hey, what can we do to help? Can we go? Of course, we were not allowed to at that point in time. But over the next several days, after the events cleared up, we were asked to come in and pull security for the 2 buildings. So the shooting started in Ambler Johnson, which is a dormitory, and went to Norris Hall. which is a classroom building where it has multiple classrooms in it. And I was staged, or I ended up guarding or standing at North Hall. So this was over the next couple of days where we were asked to, well, actually it was a couple of weeks of this. And we had to give the relief to some of the Virginia Tech, some of the responding officers, Montgomery County, Christiansburg, Blacksburg. Those guys needed it. But anyway, so I spent a couple days down there, pulling security, making sure that nobody was entering the building, doing what I could to help. So during this time period, we learned that, you know, 32 people were shot. And some of my acquaintances, some of my friends were actually on scene and involved in this, and how it affected them throughout the years. Like, I'm almost 23 years in now, and that is a changing point or impactful point in their career. So listen, 2007, I've only been in the job 4 years. And that was the first traumatic, like serious traumatic event that I had been associated with. But it's more important than that. And I'll tell you how it affects us as a law enforcement community, because the things that some of those guys seen during that time affected them deeply. Some of them are not in law enforcement anymore. Some of them, you know, still talk about it vividly. Some of them don't talk about it at all. They don't want to bring it back up. And I'm very close friends with several of those guys that was, you know, boots on the ground right there, right then, like when it was going down. But as a law enforcement community, that's just some of the ways that it had affected us and the guys around me, not so much me. But let's go back to my local community. So one of the 32 people that was killed in that tragic incident was a college student by the name of Jarrett Lane. So Jarrett was from Narrows, my hometown. Jarrett's grandmother, Miss Morgan, was my second grade teacher. And during my sixth and seventh grade year, and we're going way back, right? Him, his mother, and his grandmother lived right beside us. He was a kid. And when I say a kid, I mean couple years old at the time. So I didn't have a relationship with Jarrett like that, but I know his family well. And like I said, I knew his grandmother very well because she was one of my teachers. So you kind of get double whammied on that. You get the law enforcement side of it, which I got the back end of it. Nowhere near as bad as some of the guys that actually had to deal with that tragedy. And then on the community side of it, people that are close to us or we know very closely were impacted by that. And to this day, like I said, we're 18 years later. The bridge right below where I grew up, so I'm saying with less than a half a mile from my house, I grew up on the creek. They named a bridge after Jarrett. And my cousin still lives right beside that bridge. Some of my family, most of my family live on that little strip of road. But they named a bridge after Jarrett to remember him. And why I bring that up is because this is dropping on April 16th, and I wanted to recognize what took place then. And today, Saturday, April the 12th, at 9 o'clock this morning, they actually had a remembrance run, 3.2 miles for the 32, which Tech Spring Games today, and they have a lot of events over there going on. And anyway, so yeah. That's what happened the day that this dropped 18 years ago on a Monday morning, and it rocked our community. It rocked Virginia Tech's community, and it affected a lot of us in multiple ways. Throughout, like I said, some guys are still dealing with that, and I don't think people put that in perspective. But anyway, for the 32, April 16th, there you go. Talking about history, right? While we're talking about history, hey, how many of you guys or girls are running backup collars? So I've kind of been going back and forth with this, and I know that a lot of us have some issues with the Garmins. You know, like last year, I had two collars that would not keep satellite signal. I could pick up communication, but I could not pick up satellite. And I could reset them. I could unplug the satellite, plug it back in, and it would work for maybe that trip. It may work for 15, 20 minutes, an hour into that hunting trip. May work half a day and go out. Very aggravating. And you guys know I travel some. You know, I was in Canada last year. You know, I go down and hunt with BB and Doug and go over to West Virginia and hunt some. So I gathered up all of my telemetry collars. I gathered them up and decided that I was going to send them off and have them refurbished and use my tracking collars as a backup. That way, at least if my Garmins go out, I've got that insurance policy, right? So I had put them in a box and had them ready to ship out, and somebody moved them and put them in the other side of the basement, and I kind of forgot about it. Well, as this year comes, I'm planning some trips again. You know, I hope to be able to travel some and be in several different spots. And I run across those collars the other day, and while I was on the phone with one of our good friends, we got to talking about this, and I was like, I need all my collars refurbished. And they're like, send them to me. I'm like, no, okay. So all of my collars are QuickTrack, right? They're QuickTrack. I was a dealer for QuickTrack way back when, and I don't even know how I got started with QuickTrack, but that's pretty much what I started out with. A Marshall collar was my first one. I did not like that, the beep on that thing. And I don't know how I ran across the QuickTrack collar, but I ended up with one, and then I liked them. And, you know, they were lightweight, had a really good signal, and ended up with QuickTrack, and I ended up being a dealer for them. And that's when they were in Alabama. But anyway, so we got to talking, and they're like, well, we just acquired that company. We want to start refurbishing and rebuilding and selling these collars again. So I was like, perfect. I got them in a box. I'm shipping them out. So I've already shipped them out. And guys, if you want your collars refurbished, QuickTrack especially, but if you have old collars that you don't want or want to try to have them refurbished, you know, send them out to QuickTrack and they will refurbish them, or they'll take them and practice and work on them. And they're going to try to do the whole line of telemetry collars to be able to refurbish them, repurpose them, and so on and so forth. So guys, if you're looking for that, quicktrack.com, and the phone number will be on the bottom, and the phone number is 256-224-8130. And when you make that phone call, you're going to hear a very familiar voice on the other end of that line. So I'm doing it. I know a lot of people already do it. Some people run the double tracking, the double Garmins, and Lord, I can't afford double Garmins for all these heathens that I've got around, but I had all the QuickTrack laying around. Some of them still work, actually, and I've not used them. I got my first Garmin in 2013, so 10, 11, 12. Yeah, it's been 12 years ago. I got my first Garmin in 2013, and I'm still using the same hand, the 100. You know, I didn't use it this year because I upgraded to the 300, but I still have it. It still works. But since 2013, I can't tell you that I've put those QuickTracks on anything. And I may have here and there. I'm not sure. Maybe for the first couple of years because I didn't have enough Garmins. But a lot of those collars have been laying around for, you know, 10 years or so. And like I said, when I got to checking them, like some of them still work. Some of them, the batteries are gone. Some of them, the little rubber piece that goes around and holds the battery on, they've it's dry rotted and the magnets fell out. I got two that the antennas messed up on. So I'm excited. I've needed to do this for 2 or 3 years now, and I have not. So making it happen. So quicktrack.com, call those guys, and they'll get you set up, get your collars refurbished, buy some new collars if you wish. They're very affordable, trust me. So anyway, just something that I've been working on. I needed to do it, and I got it done. So can't wait to get them back. And they better be in good shape, because if they're not, I'm going after the people that's fixing them. You hear me? So it's only been a week since I recorded, but there's been a lot going on here in a week. Get back to the dog training side of things. So I've been loading my young dogs in the truck, no box, just a bed of the truck. And I think I'd put a video tour up of that. But I mean, they were getting where I had a couple pallets laid out, then I had a tote turned upside down to give them opportunity to get up and down or whatever. And then they got to the point where they were literally just jumping in the truck without the stuff. And I think I even told you on the last podcast that I shut the tailgate one evening and they went and tried to jump over the tailgate of the truck. So I put them back on the tile. So I pulled the old truck, the hunting truck out, pulled it down in the driveway and got them going in the dog box. Now, yeah, this is interesting. So the first time that I did this, I go out, I walk towards the truck, and they already know, right? Repetition, classical conditioning, Pavlov. They already go into the truck, and when they get to the truck, they stop. They're like, oh, this is a different picture. So I show them the food. I got two different bowls, one to go in each side of the box. And this is my big box. This is not a small box, but this is my big box. So I show them the food. I put the food right up out of the reach in the truck. So Abby flies up in the truck, and she goes in halfway and then comes out, and then she goes back, but she don't have to get her whole body in the truck to get to eat. And I'm like, I should have moved that back a little bit. So the other one, I moved back just a tad. Well, it wasn't just a few minute, I don't know. G, which is the one we called JoJo, which I didn't like. I've been calling her G for some reason. I don't know why. She got a huge knot on her head. I need to call her knot head. But she went in, and I shut the box. And then Abby went in the other side, and I shut the box. Miles would not commit. He would put his front feet up. He would come back. He would put his front feet up, but he never would commit to jumping in the truck. So what I did is I put him back up. I let them finish their food. And then I let them out and I put him back out and I give him an opportunity. Like I went back, put them up, let him have an opportunity, and he never would commit. So we did a few other things. I did some recalls with him. I actually got a handful of food, recalled, fed him, walked off, recalled him, had him come into a heel, which I lured him into a heel, recalled him into a heel and let him eat out of my hand while I was walking. So basically he was walking beside me, healing. I did a few things like that. Not a full, you know, 2 cups of food, but I give him opportunity to make it up. So the second day, I did the exact same thing. I go out, I open the boxes, I put the food a little bit further back, and Abby and G, hold on here a minute. Hold on, I got this wrote down. I wrote it down. So the second day, Miles went in, and I closed the door, no problem, right? So he got to eat his food this time. So it took him a day. Abby and G went in the other side, but they would not commit. They would go in and out, in and out. And I mean, like, they would go in and come right back out, in and right back out. So you got to think about, you know, what the dog's thinking. Like, he's in a contained environment, okay? So this has changed. He's been in an open truck, and now he's in a smaller, confined space. So they went in and out, in and out, in and out, and they did not want to commit. So I'm like, okay, I'm just going to leave the truck open. I probably skipped a step. Remember how we talk about A, B, C, D? I probably skipped a step by shutting the box on them so soon. I should have done that 2 or 3, 4 days in. And anyway, they went in and out. I went on and done some chores. And then I went back. Miles was finished, so I let him out. And guys, so second step to this. When I went to let him out of the box, I just didn't let him bust out of there. Remember, we talked about this. I open the door. I stand in front of it. I block it, right? And I let him be calm. Like, I don't want him, like, boom, ready to go. He's calm. I step out of the way. He actually stood there for a second. And then he comes out on the tailgate. He's not running over top of me. And then he jumps down. Well, I went to get the bowl out of the other side. And they had went ahead and eat all the food. So while I was doing my chores, I couldn't see them. So they must have went in and out enough to eat. So I had to tell myself at that point, just slow down a little bit, like make sure you're progressing through your steps. But I was also telling myself that a lot of people wouldn't take that time. Like, we all know that we can't hunt here in Virginia right now. I've got all the time in the world. It does not bother me to take a week to accomplish a task, or 2 weeks, or you know, if it takes much longer than that, maybe I need to change my technique or the way I'm presenting it. But like, I don't really mind. I mean, this is my downtime. This is my, you know, let's get the small things right. And that loading is so minute. I mean, a lot of people don't think about it. But I want the dog comfortable in the truck. I want the dog riding without barking and carrying on. I want them quiet. So I was finishing up the chores, cleaning the pens. And the thought was going through my head is like, you know, a lot of people think I'm crazy. They think I'm crazy for taking this amount of time to do these little things, like just throw the dog in the truck, ride him down the road, bring him back, and be done with it. And yes, I can do that. I absolutely, and I've done it for years because I didn't know any better, right? And if that's the way you do it, I mean, it's not a right or wrong way, right? It's a way. Have at it. But you know, taking that extra time and doing things a little bit slower for me, like I really get to watch the behavior. I really get to, it's challenging to figure things out sometimes. That was just something that was going through my head as I'm doing this process. I've done it 3 days now. Like I said, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, it was raining. Last night it was raining. Actually, Maddie fed out in the rain last night while I was gone, so she took care of the chores for me. This gets us into a whole nother conversation. Holy cow. Richie Zaccardi, what are you sending me? I'm telling you. So you've heard me talk about little puppy is, right? The little Cracker Jack. You know, I say this, I caught myself while I was walking around the building the other day, and I'm like, God, you say this every litter. How smart they are. How smart they are. You say this. And this one takes the cake. She takes the cake. You show her one time, she's done. She's on to the next thing. So let me tell you what happened. So here lately, again, she's picked up the habit of running my neighbor's car. And it's funny because I've watched this. She doesn't run the truck. Rob goes up the driveway, but now Rob's driving like he's got some sense. Chloe goes up the driveway like it's the Indianapolis 500. And in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, that prey drive's kicking in. She wants to chase. And I don't like it. Like, y'all know what I'm going through. So she started running cars, and she's getting extremely close. So I'm like, all right, she's going to have to start going up. We're going to put her up. If we're not home and not watching her, put her up. So she'd been up in the pen. We come home in the evenings and let her out. Well, I don't remember what day, if this was Saturday or Sunday last week. I let her run around until dark, and then I took her food, went to the pen, and put her up. Well, she ate a couple bites, and then she stood there and looked at me. All right, this is where dog training gets so interesting. And as I go through what I'm getting ready to tell you, I'll explain. Like, every dog is different. So The next evening, when I go to put her up, she runs from me. All right. Well, Heath, you use food. Food's a motivator. She could care less. So she could care less. And what I told you, she was going up to my pallet and busted in one of my bottom bags and had been, she'd been stealing a bunch of my nookshook off the pallets, which I've got that fixed. But she run from me. So I don't chase them, okay? But I tried two or three times to catch her. And by this time, I think everybody's probably like me. I'm 15, 20 minutes in, and my ears are red because now I'm mad. I'm like, girl, you better come on. Like, we ain't playing no more. And she would run around the building, and then she'd run around the other side, and then she'd run around the dog kennel, and then she'd run around the other side, and then she'd go back up underneath the building. And like I said, by this time, I feel my blood pressure going up. My ears are getting red. Like, I'm getting mad. Just the way it is. I'm getting mad. So I pick up a couple of, pieces of bark from where I keep my wood pile out back. And I throw that stuff up underneath the building to run her out. Well, that just made it worse. I talk myself off a ledge because I know that's not the way to handle things, right? Even though we know things, sometimes our emotions get the best of us, right? So I talk myself off the ledge and I went and done something else. And then I go looking for her. And she had run over in the corner of the fence and went under the fence over in the horse field. Well, when I went back around there, she was gone. I'm like, So I'm walking around the yard. I'm looking. I looked up underneath the porch. I got a front porch and a back porch they can get under. Nothing. I look underneath the building. And in fact, I go get my coon light, my Cajun, and I shine it up underneath there. Nothing. And I'm like, where is she at? So I walk over to the edge of the road and look down in Travis's cow field because she's been hanging out over there some. Nothing. Well, then I look down the driveway, and this little scuzz is down there at the barn, which is right beside the road. And I'm like, why is she down there? I've never seen her down there before. So I go about halfway down the driveway, and she takes off like a scalded bandit. Like, she gone. So I go back up, whatever I had in my hands, I take it back up to the house. I take my gloves off, and I go down the driveway. Well, she runs through Miss Bishop's yard and goes down towards the road. And I'm like, So I take off jogging, and I go down the road to cut her off and turn her. Like, at this point, I mean, I feel like I'm a horse trying to corral a bunch of steers. So I turn her. She comes back up around the barn. And so I stop. Now, I'm within 10 feet of her at this point in time. And I get down on one knee. I lower my profile. I get down on one knee. I'm not a threat. And I stood there for a second. And she comes up within about 5 feet. And she lays down. All right. So I'm having to talk to myself and make sure that I'm not doing something that's going to hinder this process. Cause I know that from the behavior that I have seen her, it's going to take her a couple of days to adjust, and boy, we did it. So she would not come to me. So as I stand up, she jumps up and takes off running back up the driveway. I'm like, okay, is she going back to the house? Now, at this point in time, I have told myself, Heath, be very cautious of how you proceed, because your 2 minutes, 5 minutes of frustration and anger, because I was at that point when she was under the building, can cost you 2, 3, 4, a month worth of time if you don't do this right. So she's going up the driveway. She crosses the driveway over to Travis's fence. She can't get through the fence. Well, she lays down. And I'm walking up through there. And I walk up through there. And she doesn't move. I'm like, okay. So do I grab her up? Do I pick her up and take her and put her in the pen? How do you handle this? So I get up beside her. And I'm like, all right, Iz, let's go. And I just keep walking. I walk to the top of the driveway. And she lays there. And I'm like, okay. So I go back down the driveway and I stay on the opposite side of her. Like, I'm trying not to be a threat. And she doesn't move. And then I make my way over to her and I reach down and I pet her. I'm like, okay, girl, let's go. This is enough. And I mean, I'm not making over her. Okay. This is a behavior that I'm not okay with. I'm not trying to reward the behavior. What I'm trying to communicate with her is it's okay. And that's exactly what I did. It's okay. So I just take off walking again. Well, she comes and she gets up and she comes walking behind me, but she stays on the same side that she's on. And I'm over in the middle of the driveway. So I walk up and she goes around the top side of the house. I go around the bottom side and go in the basement and get some food. And she comes around the corner of the basement. And when I walk back out, she takes off back up through the yard. And by this time, I'm telling you, we're probably an hour in of this mess. So I made the decision to just terminate it. Like, okay, you know, you're not winning this, but I know the damage that's being done right now, and I don't want to proceed. So I go in the house. I wait till dark. I go back out and see if she'll come to me or I can get her in the pen. Nope, she don't. She goes up on the front porch, actually, when I holler for her, and she just sits down and is just watching. I mean, all right. So I leave her out for the night, which we do it anyway. We leave her out for the night, and the next morning, I tell the kids, I said, hey, put her up before y'all leave for school. Make sure she's up. So that's what we did. They had no problem catching her. Okay, it's me. And I've never done anything to her, like never. Like, you know, she's seen me as a threat. She knew I was going to put her up. Remember we talk about this? The other thing that I just explained to you, but I didn't say it. She does not care much about human interaction, right? So she's not food motivated. She don't really care if you're taking care of her or not. She's very stubborn and independent. And I mean, how do you train one of those? Okay, so what am I going to change in my regiment with her to get over these hurdles? Because I'm already seeing Pino, my police dog. Yeah, he's toy driven. And as long as I got that toy, he'll interact with me all day long. But if I don't have that toy in my hand, he could care less than I'm on earth. He's not driven like that. So they get her put up, come home that next evening, and they do not let her out. I tell them not to let her out. I get home, and I'm feeding. I'm doing all my chores. I've got the other dogs out. They're loaded in the truck. They're doing whatever. And I open her door to the kennel, and I kneel down in front of it. I'm not letting her out of there without coming to me. She's got to go through me to get out. And when I say that, I mean, she has to come to me and we need to have a conversation, right? Nonverbal, but we need to have a conversation and then you're free to go. And I know if she does this, I'm still going to have trouble catching her. I know. So I kneel down and she won't come to me. She sits in the back of the pen. She's only allowed to go 10 foot because that's how big the pen is. So she sits in the very back of it. And I step away with the door open. She does not move. I shut the door and I go on about my business. So I go back, I don't know, 30 minutes later, after I get all my chores and everything, all the other dogs put up, and I take the food in. And remember we talked about Spook, you know, it took me 5 days with Spook for him to come to me. But now this is a different story, but... So anyway, I take the food in, I set it down, and I sit right on top of her doghouse. I just plop down on it. And the door's still open. She can get in and out. And she goes around the corner of that pen and into her house. Boom. And I'm like, man, like, why are you so traumatized? Like, what at this point has caused this? So I sat there for, I don't know, 5-10 minutes. Well, it wasn't very long, but I sat there long enough. And she actually stuck her head out one time. I reached down to pet her. She ducked back in. I quit. So I leave the food, and I go back, and I'm done with her for the day. Done. So the next day, we repeat this cycle, okay? So the next day, I go out. I open the door. I kneel down in front of it, and I'm like, I'm going to change things up real quick here. So she comes to me, but she really wants to go through me, not to me, right? So there's the problem. So I grab her up, and I mean, like I said, when I grab her up, like I stick my hand right in between her front her front two legs, and I pick her up off the ground, her front side up off the ground, and I'm petting her, and I'm like, hey, girl, come on, come on, come on. Well, she's kind of wiggling, and she's wanting to go. Like, she's wanting to go. I pick her up, and I carry her over to the tie-out, and I'm starting her earlier, right? I'm usually 5 months in when I start this. She's a little bit earlier. So I put her on the tie-out. I go get her food. I put it in front of her. And once she realizes there's pressure on her, she just lays down. She shuts down. Okay. How many times have I already told you she's laid down or she's sat down? So she's shutting down on me. That's her mechanism. Boom. I'm not moving. If I'm not moving, nothing's happening. Right. All right. So training. Listen. So the other dogs are in the truck or whatever they're doing. And I went back just close enough to see if she had eaten. She had eaten a little bit, but not a lot. Well, she ends up flipping the bowl over. So I picked the bowl up. I let the other dogs out of the truck or whatever I was doing with them at that point in time. And I ended up letting her loose, but I make her come to me. I'm only got like 18. I don't know. I think Kevin made me an 18-inch tether. So I make her come to me. I unclip it. I'm petting her. I stand up really slow. And I walk off, and she still thinks she's tied. And then she realizes she's not. And I mean, she gone. Pew! She gone. All right. So she gets to do whatever. Well, that evening at dark, when I go to put her up, she come to me, and I literally picked her up, took her to the dog pen, and put her in it. I petted her, put her in it, and that was done for that session. So the very last session that we had, like I said, before it started raining, is the next day we repeated that exercise. I kneeled down in front of her pen. She comes to me. I pick her up. This time she's a little bit more, I don't want to say head. She's a little bit more active. Like she's wiggling a lot more trying to get it because she knows what's coming. Remember I just said, you show her one time, you better move on to something else because she got you figured out. Like super, super intelligent and also makes these dogs super, super hard to train. Like, wow. So I pick her up. I take her to the tether. I tie her up. She starts eating immediately. I do my business, whatever I'm doing. I come back. I repeat it. I make her come to me. I unsnap her. Like within half the time, she's out running around. And then we go back to put her up that evening. Can't catch her. She comes within 5 foot of me, and then she'll run off. And when I say run off, like she, I don't know, she'll go 10 or 15 yards. She's not like running like she did the couple days before that, where she went plumb down to the road, which is unacceptable. So I'm having to be very patient with her. And all the dogs, like even the other set, loading them, I closed the doors too soon. They're in a confined area. It's a different environment. It's a different picture. But I'm having to be super, super patient with her. And the intelligence that this pup has is beyond me. Like, I'm telling you, she almost knows what I'm getting ready to do before I do it. Even when I start changing things up. Super, super smart, super trying my patience. Like, she's trying every patience that I have. But I also realize that I can cause more damage by handling it wrong than if I just slow down and handle it in a different manner. And again, that way may not be the way, it's just a way. It's just what I've decided to back off and try different methods. And if those don't work, I'll continue to update you. Like, it's okay. I'll figure. I know enough different ways to do things. I'll figure something else out. But she definitely got under my skin that evening. And I think, like I said, I don't know if it's Sunday or Monday evening, but she got under my skin. And again, leaving her up in the pen, kind of letting her reset, making her come through me to get what she wants, which is out. Like that's what I'm going to do. And I'm going to continue to do that. So she understands that I'm not the enemy. And all pups go through different phases. I mean, even the pups that I got now, I've had to put collars on them. They get over in the cow field and they get to wandering around. And when I holler for them, you know, they're distracted. They don't want to come. So I've been working on that. And I did actually, I think I'm going to get me a mini, an alpha mini. And the reason is I've got the Garmin Pro 550. And I use Dogtra. I've got Dogtra Garmin. I've got several different e-collars. But the Garmin Mini is the same size, the Garmin Pro 550 is the same size as the Mini. And I charged it up, got it ready, and checked to make sure my vibrate works, make sure my tone works. And that's probably the next step with changing some of her behavior. But I want her to understand the behavior before I go trying to change it, because I don't want her. She's so smart. Like if I don't do this right, I'm going to do a lot more damage, or I'm going to set things back where it's going to take me a lot longer to fix it. So anyway, there's where we're at, guys. April 16th. Remember that day, and lots going on. Hopefully next week we got some good stuff to talk about: turkey hunting, trout fishing. Man, what a way to spend the week, right? Thank you guys for tuning in to What's Up Wednesday. Do you like to be outdoors like I do? If so, unlock the wilderness with Onyx Maps. It is your ultimate guide to exploring, hunting, and conquering the great outdoors. With detailed maps, real-time tracking, and exclusive access to public and private lands, Onyx Maps is your key to adventure. Discover the possibilities and never get lost again with Onyx. So subscribe today using the promo code K920, letter K, number 920, and know where you stand.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.